Hello and welcome to Be the Change, the latest podcast from the Climate Clinic, a brand new series brought to you by the Global Consortium on Climate and Health Education. We now know that healthcare contributes to the climate crisis and makes up more than 4.4% of net global climate emissions. The health sector must be a societal leader in protecting public and planetary health from climate change. In order to do this, it needs to decarbonize rapidly, build resilience and adaptive capacity, as well as fostering health equity and meeting global goals, including universal health coverage. In this series, we'll be talking with experts from around the world in order to shine light on exactly what you can do in your communities today. Welcome back to another episode of Be the Change, the first of 2023. I am so excited to be introducing our first guest this year, Dr. Laurie Houston. Laurie graduated from the dentistry program at the University of Toronto in 1985 and ran her own solo practice in Bracebridge from 1987 until 2012. She now associates in a dental practice in Orillia, part-time, as well as providing dental services once a month for an Indigenous community in the Georgian Bay region. She has also worked in the remote Indigenous communities in Northern Ontario. In her own community, Laurie has served on the board for the Muskoka Family Youth and Child Services, as well as the board for the South Muskoka Memorial Hospital. She is the former president of the Muskoka Simcoe Dental Society and former member of the Council of the Ontario Dental Association. Since 2012, Laurie has been part of over 20 international volunteer dental projects. The last four projects were ones which she personally organized and led. She has also been actively involved with local volunteer dental initiatives in Toronto, Haliburton, Barrie and Orillia. She was responsible for organising a free dental day for women from local shelters in the Orillia office she currently associates in. Laurie has also started her own non-profit organisation, Can Help Through Healthcare, chthc.org, to continue to develop dentistry to communities in need in developing countries. She's also currently on the board of directors of the ODA and the chair of the Environmental Sustainability Working Group. Laurie, we're going to be discussing a really important topic today, and that is lobbying for change with our regulatory bodies. Before we delve into the meat of this podcast, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with healthcare sustainability.
Thank you very much, Adesh, for the invitation to your podcast. Very kind of you to include me. I don't consider myself in any way an expert, but I am passionate about this issue. I got involved with sustainability in healthcare probably near the beginning of COVID, but far beyond that, early in my dental career, I have been very aware of the amount of waste we generate in the dental clinic and have always questioned the efficacy of doing this. And during COVID, I had more time to read up on some of the issues involved with sustainability, that being microplastics. And at this point, I actually have somewhat of an existential anxiety about microplastics and nanoplastics in the environment, how they're affecting not only humans, but the rest of the animal kingdom and diversity on our planet. And I'm asking myself and I'm asking my fellow practitioners, what are we doing and what can we do to mitigate the amount of waste that we generate?
Those are all great points, and we will dive into them in more detail. Speaking of plastics, I had a few deliveries this morning turn up and I was just appalled at how much unnecessary plastic packaging came out in my hands. Just totally unnecessary.
Agreed. I actually just got a bunch of deliveries for a volunteer dental mission I'm doing next week. And I can tell you that many of the items are small little things we use to do restorations in teeth. And the compules are in a plastic bottle. The plastic bottle is in a plastic bag. The plastic bag is in another plastic bag. And then that's all in a box. And it astounds me, because there's no need for all of this. And while plastic can be a very useful material, we seem to have lost sight of the problems, the harm it can do, and we are no longer using it in a responsible manner globally, as far as I'm concerned.
Completely. I absolutely agree with you, Laurie. Many of the decisions around plastic and packaging and our waste are taken by the powers that be. They're often out of our hands, decided by the government, regulatory bodies and healthcare. Now, many of our listeners might be familiar with the concept, but just for those who are not, remind us about what we mean by a regulatory body when it comes to healthcare.
So regulatory bodies are the powers that be that make the rules and decisions as to what we can and cannot do in terms of our protocols in our clinics and hospitals. And quite often there are layers of regulations. So for instance, in my particular province in Ontario in Canada, we have Health Canada, we have the Ministry of Health for the province of Ontario, we have the Public Health as well, and then we have the Royal College of Dental Surgeons of Ontario. And everyone has their own take on what's acceptable and not acceptable, and it's almost like peeling an onion, and it's quite astounding to me that there are all these layers of regulation when it really, when I look at it from a reasonable perspective, to me, a germ is a germ in India, China, Canada, wherever. Why isn't there sort of universal agreement on what protocols should be in healthcare? It astounds me. And it seems to be to some extent driven by the affluence of a country, because I can tell you with my volunteer work that many other developing countries do not have nearly the amount of protocols that we have in Canada because they simply can't afford to.
Absolutely. We'll definitely come onto that. And we're going to talk a little bit about the differences between various countries and even clinical specialties within the same country. So presumably, these regulatory bodies, Laurie, have a key role when it comes to deciding protocols and our practice. So evidently, they play a fairly significant role in determining our carbon footprint, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So even prior to COVID, the infection control protocols that were we were subject to in Ontario were toughened up, beefed up quite a bit. I believe as a result of the outfall of a particular dentist in Florida, where there were quite a few patients who contracted HIV, whether or not there was justification for that is somewhat of a nebulous issue at this point. But in any case, it created a severe outcry with respect to, ooh, are we doing enough in dentistry to protect our patients and ourselves? So quite a bit more single-use items were introduced at that point. And then when COVID hit, it became even that much more that single-use items were introduced into our protocols in the clinic. So yes, they are a huge part of our of what becomes our carbon footprint in terms of what we are regulated to do in the profession. And saying that, we need to be looking at what is the evidence that they are using to create these protocols. Well, I can tell you in the in my province that the level of evidence is the fifth level of evidence, which is the lowest level of evidence. It's based on case reports and so-called expert opinion. The highest level of evidence is based on randomized controlled trials. Well, we haven't really got good science behind these protocols. And given the environmental crisis we are now facing globally, I believe it is important for that to be readdressed, reevaluated with an environmental lens. Because while our regulatory bodies can be telling us that their objective is to do no harm, their mandate is to protect the public, I would question how, in fact, they are protecting the public and indeed the younger generations and future generations if we are required to use protocols that use a great deal of single-use plastic items that are generating incredible amounts of microplastics and nanoplastics into our environment now. Those particles now being under scrutiny, and the science is early in this, with respect to what a healthcare hazard these particles are. But there's quite a bit of evidence starting to build that they are, in fact, egregious in terms of healthcare.
It's a really important point that you raise, Laurie. When we think about plastics, one of the biggest fears and issues is the buildup of this non-biodegradable trash that gets into our food chains. But of course, plastics also contribute to the healthcare's carbon footprint through manufacturing, the energy required for destruction. There's an interesting article which you shared with me prior to this show from CAPE, the Canadian Associations of Physicians for the Environment, And they point out in their article that referring to the plastic life cycle is really a misnomer, because all the plastics we've created are still present on our planet.
That's right. It's very hard to get rid of plastic. I mean, that's one of the reasons why it's such a useful material. But at the end of its life, it's trying to get rid of it is very problematic. And in fact, recycling is never going to completely address the problem. There's just simply too much plastic being generated. And there's a carbon footprint involved in recycling. We really need to step back and look at what we do through the environmental lens and get rid of the plastic items in our practices that really aren't necessary and in fact have no good scientific evidence to justify.
Okay, Laurie, we've clearly spelled out the issue here, which is that of single-use plastics and rigid, archaic protocols that sit with our regulatory bodies. So we need these regulatory bodies to change their stance and their advice and guidance. I know you've been fighting for change within your professional organizations. Could you share your experience with the listeners about how you've gone about this and some of the take-homes from this?
Well, I can tell you that very recently I did communicate with the president of my regulatory body of the Royal College of Dental Surgeons, and she in fact got back to me and was very moved by the article that you just referred to from CAPE, the article on the life cycle of plastics, and she found it very disturbing. So at least I've planted a seed in the mind of someone who has an influential position. That is just a start, though. I mean, we are way behind in terms of what should be happening with our regulatory bodies, as far as I'm concerned. And they really cannot justify what we are required to do if they aren't looking at things through the environmental lens at this point. It's pretty discouraging. And in terms of my own colleagues, there are my younger colleagues do have interest in this, because I think they realize their future and the future of their families depends upon it. But people from my generation often think I'm just a little bit nuts.
Do you have any specific advice for listeners about what steps they might be able to take when it comes to contacting or challenging our regulatory bodies? How would you go about it from a practical standpoint?
Well, I can tell you what I've personally done, and that is to say, I feel that healthcare as a whole needs to address this problem, and that we need to congregate as an entire sector and have our voice heard across all of the regulatory bodies with a strong, singular voice to make sure they realize we do believe this is a problem that must be addressed and across all sectors of healthcare. Trying to do it just on an individual regulatory basis, there's some benefit in that, but I believe moving forward, we need to have one voice as healthcare professionals, and we need to build capacity and make the regulatory bodies realize it's just not acceptable to fall back on the precautionary principle and not actually get some hard science behind what we do if in fact we can remove a lot of protocols that are generating all this waste.
You've mentioned that the level of evidence to justify these protocols is pretty weak. What is the solution then? Is it that we need more evidence to demonstrate the opposite? So ideally studies that would show that reusing and doing away with single-use plastics makes no difference to infection rates. Is that what we need to slam the brakes on this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when I do a procedure in a clinic in Ontario, we are required to use multiple sterilization pouches that the instruments are sterilized in, so that the instruments are in no way bound together, or they're not touching in any way. And these pouches are paper plastic with adhesive that puts them together. So routinely for a procedure, I am throwing out anywhere from 5 to 15 of these sterilization bags per procedure, to the point where some of my patients see all of this garbage on the countertop and look at me, because we're required to open them in front of our patients. So our patients indeed do know that they have been properly sealed in these pouches, and you know, we present the instruments in a sealed capacity before they get laid out on a tray. And You know, I really don't know where the justification for this came. I don't think there's ever been an immense amount of infection transmission in dentistry, and I know there are articles that point to that being the case. And by the same token, we are now throwing all of this garbage out for every single patient. And if you just take for Ontario for an example, you know, 10 to 11,000 dentists, 5 to 15 of these bags, 8 to 10 patients a day, day after day in a year. We'll do the math. It's pretty egregious the amount of waste that's being generated. When I go to developing countries, they don't wrap their instruments at all. I'm not necessarily saying that should be the protocol, but there are now reusable wraps that we could be turning to. And a big part of my advocacy locally has been trying to encourage implementing reusable items to wrap our instruments, because there, you know, it's like meet me halfway. I'm asking the regulators to meet me halfway.
Well, change needs to happen fast, and people who are listening, go ahead with it and push for the change. If it's literature or studies that you want to get out, get it published. And if you want to be advocates for change, make it happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We need microbiological studies that give us good science behind what we do. And I can tell you, I've reached out to some microbiologists and they all shy away from this. I've asked some microbiologists to do some efficacy studies. And I believe there is such an atmosphere, an environment of fear with respect to the regulatory bodies that people are not willing to engage in this sort of a discussion to any great degree.
Great point there in terms of needing microbiological evidence to demonstrate, if that's what it takes, that we do not need these measures in place, or at least all of them in place.
Well, at least show me the evidence that we do. And if you can't show me the evidence that we do based on hard science, then please implement change that takes into account in the risk-benefit equation the environmental degradation that these practices are creating.
People are hopefully feeling motivated at this stage rather than despondent. What are the resources and where can people upskill themselves about regulatory bodies, microplastics, and lobbying for change?
Well, there's very little written about environmental sustainability vis-a-vis regulatory protocols right now. I actually did a literature search. There's not a great deal of information on that. However, there's a great report that just came out from the Lancet Planetary Health in December 2022, Volume 6, where they actually, it's an open access living database of healthcare environmental impact assessments. So this is a tool that people can continue to add life cycle assessments that are being done in all the niches of healthcare. And I'm very happy to say that one of my colleagues, Dr. Brett Duane, is the sixth most published author on life cycle assessments in healthcare. This is something that can it's a repository that can be added to, and it can continue to hopefully influence change. It actually points to the fact that in every case, single-use items have a higher carbon footprint than reusable items, with the exception of areas where they're using coal-based energy for doing the infection control repackaging procedures.
These are fab articles for the listeners to get started with. Laurie, thank you so much. Do you have any last words of inspiration and motivation for our listeners?
I think my last comment would be to say that as healthcare professionals, we are supposed to do no harm. None of us can say we are doing no harm, given what we are generating in terms of waste with our procedures. And we really need to step back, reevaluate this, and lobby for change. Because, I mean, we have one world, we have one planet, and our resources are in fact limited. And we need to step back and make the necessary changes to try and make this planet sustainable for the future generations, and not just humans, but all life forms.
What a powerful message. Thank you again, Dr. Laurie Houston, for your time, and I'm sure we will see you again soon.
Thank you so much, Adesh. It was a pleasure to speak with you, and keep it up. You're getting the message out, and I salute you for doing these podcasts.